Welcome to Career Tools. This resume stinks, and it sure does. Part two. Here we go. This podcast answers these questions. What's wrong with this resume? And believe me, folks, it's a lot.
There's creation, and then there's maintenance. We create relationships via one-on-ones while we're rolling out the Trinity. And once we've completed that process, we're in the maintenance phase, which means we need to make sure that we keep working at our relationships via one-on-ones. And it can be hard to stay on track, to keep working. Entropy is always against us, which is why we recommend Roadmap. It allows you to track, to maintain, to nurture those relationships. It's how we measure, and it's how we manage. Get Roadmap with a personal license or an on-site EMC.
So we got loads of really good comments, lots of things that we agreed with. So now in the second part of this, we are going to go over our thoughts.
Yeah, we're gonna pretend that we didn't read those comments. We'll refer to them a little bit and just go over and say, okay, here's a resume. What do we think?
Yeah.
Let's tear it apart.
Okay. So we'll start with the overall format. And this is going to be something that upsets people, but the visual first impression your resume must give is boring professionalism. And I know that's hard to hear because nobody wants to have a boring resume because it's about you and you want to think of yourself as not a boring person, of creative and interesting. But the first impression somebody has of your resume or somebody has of you is your resume. And since most of us aren't designers, then if we try and do creative or interesting, it's almost always negative. It almost always creates something negative in the person looking because we don't know what we're doing as non-designers. In fact, the visual impression of a resume is so little about the text, you might as well put lorem ipso in there, the standard filler text for printers. Lorem ipsum just shows them where things are on the page and how it looks. And that's what the resume is like. The first impression is not about what you've put on there. It's about all of the other things. And if it looks horrible, then that's the first impression that somebody has of your resume and of you. And all the recommendations you read anywhere that say your resume should be memorable or noticeable create a counterproductive resume. If you want to be memorable, have great accomplishments. That's it. And the only rare exception to this rule are creative industries and roles like designers, who obviously know what they're doing, and marketing. And even their resumes don't need to be designed because they have portfolios of their work. So things that they can show of what they have done. And those things should be creative and interesting. But their resume needs to be an evidence of how they used those things they created that were creative and interesting to the benefit of the company, which is what an accomplishment is.
My sense of the creative, memorable or noticeable. Here's my take, folks. Now, you may disagree with me. You find this cynical and I've been doing this for 30 years now. But here's my take. If your resume attempts to be visually appealing and you are not in a role where visually appealing is necessary. You're not a graphic designer. You're not an industrial designer and what have you. And by the way, when I see those people's resumes, they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. However they use the golden mean and everything else they've ever been taught, they're beautiful. I don't want them wacky, but I rarely see that. If you're trying to make your resume memorable or noticeable visually, you're telling me you're insecure about your accomplishments. Mm-hmm. A memorable resume is all about impressive accomplishments. The visual representation, the first impact of the resume, should say to me, this follows standards and norms that will make it easy for you to read it. In reading it, I am able quickly to see that you followed all the standard procedures, and now the content and not the form stands out to me. And the content, if you have great accomplishments, is just like they just sing at me. I just immediately see them and go, oh, this is going to be fantastic. If I first see something that has visual elements in it, I immediately have concern that somebody mistakenly believes that they have a responsibility to make their resume memorable and noticeable in ways that don't help me. And so I assume, oh, insecure. So I'll dig for things that you ought to be insecure about. Now, you may think that makes me unfair, but I actually would tell you that makes me normal. That's how we look at resumes. And almost everybody I know says, I don't look at one resume at a time. I look at 50 or at 100 at a time. And they do it sitting on the couch while watching a movie with their spouse and kids. You better not try to be creative. If they're doing it at 10 o'clock at night, they're just going to throw it away.
It's the same with you wear a suit to an interview, and it doesn't matter how much we rail against the fact that the way we look and what we wear should be unimportant. It's not unimportant. That's why you wear a suit to a funeral, because if you turn up in board shorts and a t-shirt, you're doing it wrong. Same with your resume. It has to be the suit. And if you have a resume like this, that looks like this, and you got hired, well done. And we're worried that you extrapolate an instance into a trend. And we're going to talk about that later on in the guidance, but don't stop listening because you think that your resume got you the job and therefore what we're going to say is irrelevant. It isn't, because of the hot market, cold market thing.
Yeah.
So the first part of this resume has what I call the where do I look problem, because of the, as we described earlier, the big purple W and the red lozenges with the white text for the skills. And then there's a little logo for work experience that looks like a briefcase. There's three different fonts, three different colors, two headings with different icons, and a series of the red lozenges. And my first reaction was, where do I look? What are you trying to tell me? What do you want me to read first? I have no idea. And the important part, where they worked, what they did, how well they did it, is completely buried. And that's the bit that I should be able to read first. If you look at a magazine ad, there's one picture, one headline, one company name, a logo, and maybe one or two paragraphs of text. It's a deliberate path that the creator of the magazine ad has laid out for you. You look at the picture, if it's something pretty or interesting to you, then you read the headline. And if that makes you interested, then you read the company name and the logo. And if you recognize it or don't recognize it, or it tells you something about it, then you read the text. It's a path, and your resume should be the same way.
Should be the same, yep.
Where did you work? What did you do? How well did you do it? And then how do I contact you? Or how does the reader contact you?
Another problem this resume has is wasted space. The people who argue that resumes should be on two pages and have plenty of white space say that white space increases readability, which is technically true, but cannot be infinitely extensible, meaning you can't have one word per page in a 200-word document and therefore a 200-page document and say that white space increases readability. If you're reading our show notes, you'll see a line between each paragraph of text so that you can see that some sentences are grouped together around one idea. But this idea has been adopted wholesale by people who don't understand it. Again, they've extended it to the point of unusability. Designers know how to use white space. They use it deliberately, and they know how your eye moves across a page. If you're designing a resume to make it pretty, and you don't know that there is a way that human eyes track every piece of paper in front of them, then you're going to have trouble designing it in order to get maximum effectiveness out of the visual impression you want to leave. You just can't add white space and say, oh, that's better. The white space on this document, and this resume to the left of the work experience text, is essentially a huge indent or margin. I guess it's an indent, not a margin. Technically, it's a margin, but it appears as an indent because the margin on the right is half an inch and the margin on the left is 2 inches or something. It's wasted. Doesn't work. You're violating the rules, or you have an idea and you don't know what the genesis of the idea is, and so you're implementing it really inefficiently for yourself.
That's the thing. Don't just add white space. So next is the work experience section, and I said this earlier, the most important part of your resume is the section that describes your work experience, right? It's the skills you've used and the results that you've had That's what the hiring manager hopes to leverage into benefits for his team. So it's not the first part of the resume if you read from the top down, but it's the most important, which is why we're going to start there. So we can start with a positive. The work experience on this resume is reverse chronological, meaning the most recent job comes first. And that's important because your most recent job is usually the most senior and it's usually the most relevant to the job that you want. And so you want that information to come first because then the hiring manager says, oh, look, this person's impressive and they do roughly what I would want someone to be doing. So that's good. The other thing that's positive about this is the creator has included both the years and the months of their job. So we've said this before in other casts, but if you write 2016 to 2017 as the length of time that you were in a job, that could mean December 2016 to January 2017.
Literally 1 month.
Which is one month, or even
2 days.
2 days, right?
Yeah.
Or it could be January 2016 to December 2017, which is 2 years. And if you use just the years, the automatic assumption is that you are trying to hide the fact that it was a month long or a 2 month job and the rest of the time you are unemployed or you were doing something else that you don't want to admit to. So you have to have the months, and it matters less that you have a gap. If you have the month and the year and there's a gap of a couple of months, that matters less than only having the year and kind of hiding it. It's better to have a gap that you might be asked about or have to explain than to try and hide it. And then the person who hit the resume says, I don't know when this person was working here. They're trying to hide something from me. If they're hiding one thing, they're hiding lots of things. No. And then the other thing that's positive, we have a title and a company. And you would be surprised how many resumes don't have both. So if you worked for the same company in multiple roles, then include the company name again and again. As Mark said, we're reading resumes quickly. We're looking at multiple resumes in one go. And so what happens is you read the company, you read the job title, you go down to the next one, you read the job title, and you sort of remember the company, and you get to the third one, you had no idea where they were working.
Yep.
So repeat it and make it easy for the person who's reading.
Yeah, good. Okay, let's talk about responsibilities. We've beaten this horse to death. The resume is visually misleading when it comes to responsibilities and accomplishments. At first glance, it appears there are responsibilities and accomplishments. It follows the responsibilities and accomplishments structure that is the best way to transmit information about your experience. And the way all effective resumes are is that there is a paragraph of responsibilities, sentences with periods strung together on the same line, the way you would write any paragraph in any standard prose document. Below that responsibilities paragraph are bulleted accomplishments. Accomplishments don't go in the paragraph, and responsibilities don't go on the bullets. Okay? But if you look at this resume closely, you see that both sections are responsibilities. This is a classic mistake. This is the single most frequently made a strategic mistake on the on most people on the part of resumes, the misunderstanding, or I would argue they actually do understand it, but they are attempting to beguile the resume reader by implying the bullets, implying that they're that these are accomplishments. They just weren't written quite like accomplishments should be. One can only assume that if you have responsibilities as bulleted accomplishments, that you don't have any accomplishments and you're trying to hide that fact. It's even possible this person was fired and is being dishonest about that. We generally try not to assume that much about a person, but it makes us raise an eyebrow, if I could raise an eyebrow. if you think that's unfair, consider that she used this format, knowing that bullets, I mean, she has bullets, so she knows that bullets are generally taken to be accomplishments and then put something other than accomplishments there. It's like serving a meal on a silver platter, knowing the recipient will expect a meal to fit in the presentation and giving them a bologna sandwich with no lettuce, with no tomato, with no Miracle Whip. I mean, what easy is that? Yeah. If you look at the most recent role, there's a hint that this person is trying to fill up their resume. Lots of words. You might even call it verbal meringue.
Mm-hmm.
When we see that, we think not enough to say, pat on the resume, which is funny because they go to two pages.
That's exactly.
The first sentence in the responsibilities paragraph is, in my current role, I am a member of the SAP Cloud Solutions Architect team where I deploy enterprise solutions based on SAP HANA. That's 24 words.
Right. And it says the role title is just above it, Cloud Solutions Architect. So you don't need to say, I am a member of the team.
Yeah. You could just say architect and deploy enterprise solutions based on SAP HANA. 9 words. In fact, if we included SAP HANA in the job title, that sentence could be 5 words, architect and deploy enterprise solutions, which, by the way, I find a really good first statement. Okay, I know what architecting is, and I know what enterprise solutions are, and I know roughly how they get deployed. Okay, I'm going to see some accomplishments around that, which I like.
Which you hope. So yes. Even if we give the writer the benefit of the doubt that they're not just padding their resume, right? We could still conclude that they don't know how to write concisely. Because the second sentence says, I also work closely with the SAP sales team, providing technical pre-sales assistance on potential opportunities that can leverage SAP HANA, which is 21 words. And you can reduce that to 4, which is provide technical pre-sales assistance. If you do those two sentences, then you can get down to 13 words, which leaves an awful lot of space or gets your resume on one page. And then you can fill it up with all the things that the paragraph is missing, like what kind of customers, do you have a team, and if how many, do you have a budget, how big are the projects in dollars or people or data, what's the scope of your role. In a big company like SAP, a solution architect could be one of 50 on a project, with their role being a small one in terms of what they're actually responsible for. Or they could be leading a solution for one of SAP's biggest customers, which would be a huge role. And without that information, we have no way of knowing. And if we don't know, we assume the negative.
Melbourne, Australia, how are you going? We've moved our Australian location from Sydney this year in order to bring our guidance even closer to you. Mark himself will be presenting, and we'd love to have you join us at our inaugural Melbourne event. You can register online today at manager-tools.com/training. Catch you later.
Okay, going on to accomplishments. Below every responsibilities paragraph is supposed to be a bulleted list of the accomplishments, experiences the person has achieved in each role. In this case, though, we have major responsibilities. It says in the bulleted list, major responsibilities in my current role include working with enterprise clients, developing solutions around one, information management, big data stores, machine learning, analytics, and cognitive services. In other words, I'm going to give you bullets, but they're really not. And interestingly, in this, they're numbered. I've never seen that before on a resume.
I don't think I have either.
No. In fact, when we looked at this resume, guys, because of how many resumes we see, we think, oh, those are bullets. And we have to look again to realize they've numbered them,
which,
by the way, is a bad idea because numbers, the way the numbers are, they look like they're part of the sentence. The entire first part of this accomplishment section, that's what bullets are supposed to be, is redundant. So it essentially says the same thing above. Now, we're supposed to get accomplishments, and okay, great. It's the list of areas that they're developed solutions for, and it's relevant, but it doesn't say how well they did those things. It's entirely possible this person developed a solution for an enterprise client around information management that completely failed. Being responsible for something doesn't mean they've done it well. We often say, we've alluded to it earlier, two people, one of which was fantastic in a job and the other which fired, would have the same responsibility section for the same job. So responsibilities are not a differentiator. They can show growth in a career, but I don't want somebody getting increasing responsibilities and failing every time. It happens, unfortunately.
The pizza principle, right?
Yeah. So overall, this is the biggest miss we see in resumes. You must have accomplishments that proves you can do the job you're being asked to do. I mean, in this case, in this example, project manager, this person was a project manager, needs to have accomplishments that show they can bring a project in on time, on budget, in scope, Coders need to have accomplishments to show they can write code that doesn't break, that they can meet time deadlines, that their code passes QA testing efficiently. Salespeople need accomplishments to show they can make their number. Solutions architects need accomplishments to show they can deliver solutions which fit the economic, technological, and people requirements. Get those solutions approved, get them delivered, and then show results in their use by whomever's using them. I mean, look, is it likely that the owner of this resume only drew a flowchart in crayon as if that was the weakest possible way they could have fulfilled an accomplishment? The answer, of course, to that is no. But do you have any evidence that they have the skills and abilities required to be a highly successful solution architect? Also, no. If you get another resume that has responsibilities and accomplishments, it gives you a sense of that person's good. You've got to choose that person to be interviewed over this person because you don't know. You're rolling the dice on this person.
And remember, time is your most precious resource. So as a hiring manager, are you going to waste an hour interviewing someone who may or may not be good? No, because you haven't got an hour to spare. Nobody has.
Yeah, this person gave 7 major areas that they had developed solutions for and 6 sub-areas. There should be a bullet for each one of those projects with a quantified accomplishments. That would be good. But, you know, and maybe you'll think, okay, I don't need to do all of them because I'll get a chance in the interview. But you're not getting an interview with this resume. So.
And finally, in this section, the quantity of information. So Mark said earlier, there's a sort of 2.5-inch margin beside where the responsibilities and accomplishments are, which is just wasted text. And actually, the text on this resume is pretty small, and the resume is 1.5 pages long. But actually, if you took out everything else, the work experience piece is less than 0.5 pages. So in other words, the important information takes up less than 0.5 the space it could have done. It's like somebody says they'll pay for your supermarket, your grocery shopping, and you put an empty box in 0.5 the cart and then fill only 0.5 the cart. You're like, you only get 0.5 the benefit. That's the same way as this resume. It might as well have been a 0.5-page resume, which is pointless.
Crazy. Okay, skills section. Skill sections, as we've alluded to, we've said, we've shouted from the rooftops on resumes, are a waste of time for at least 3 reasons. First, from what we've just said about responsibilities and accomplishments, it should be pretty obvious. Putting SQL data warehouse under skills tells the hiring manager nothing. How did you use it? What was the size and complexity of the data you were working with? I mean, what were you integrating it with? How effective were you in providing value to the organization using it, right?
Yeah.
Second, when the fad for including skills paragraphs started, hiring managers found that the resume would have a software or programming language listed, but the person would not be any kind of expert. Sometimes, yeah, look, you can say that you know something about something, but not give any indication that you are an expert at it. And so most of us dismiss the skills section. We are smart enough when we read your resume to infer skills from accomplishments. That's how we do it. And it wastes space.
Yeah. I was trying to do something yesterday with a relational database, and I did a course in college. I had 1 semester of relational databases, which I passed miraculously, but I am useless. I was convinced I thought I understand it technically, but no, I am useless at it. So if I put that on my resume just because I did a course in college, I'd be lying about my skills.
Yes. So another reason that these skills paragraphs are bad is because when they began to be used, companies began to keep databases of submitted resumes. And the idea was that if you wanted to be hired to use SQL data warehousing, you had to have those words on your resume. And that's an applicant tracking system. But it's not how they work today. It's not how recruiters work. They look at job titles. And by the way, there are companies that think it makes them cute and clever and marketing savvy to put weird job titles in their job. But it's actually not helping people in terms of their career. Recruiters look for job titles. And they know that not every architect will have written SQL data warehouse on their resume, which they would assume they might have if they had done the right jobs, but they'll all have architect in their job title.
It's a much wider search than people think it is.
Yeah. If a skill is required or desired in the job you're applying for, make sure your use of it is included in your cover letter and include it with one of your accomplishments, such as discover $349,000 in additional revenue using SQL Data Warehouse to instigate an abandoned cart search. Right?
To which a hiring manager says, "Ooh, $349,000.
Yeah. Okay. More valuable than it's more than I'm going to pay them. That's good. It's going to be a net win for me."
Right.
And then look, the skills section on the resume is made worse by the style the creator has chosen. Again, we have the red lozenges with the white printing on them. Reading white on red is hard. The spaces between the lozenges are also right. That makes it even harder. It's hard to pick out things usefully. It's just hard.
Okay, certifications. Certifications are also a waste of space. Either the certification is a requirement, in which case you need to tell the hiring manager that you have it in your cover letter, or it's not, in which case it's immaterial. Candidates often think that certifications make them look up to date or intelligent or knowledgeable. You know, somebody who's been unemployed for a while often has a lot of new certifications because they feel like, what do you say, worry is like a rocking chair?
It gives you something to do, but it didn't get you anywhere.
Yeah, that's what certifications are. They give you something to do, but they don't really get you anywhere because you haven't proved that you can use the skill in a way that benefits the company. And, you know, if you took a course 5 years ago and you haven't used it since, it's not a positive indicator of your knowledge or your abilities. It's not helpful. So university, you know, if you need a degree and you have a degree, that goes on your resume. If there is a particular certification that you need to do this role, then it could go on your resume or it goes in your cover letter. But if it's not relevant, you just did it for interest, leave it off.
Yeah, good. Okay, put all this stuff together, you come up with the result. What are the results of this resume? Look, obviously, I mean, from systematically, the only good result for a resume is an interview. The reason you create a resume is to give the hiring manager enough information to encourage him or her to spend more time interviewing you. No one has enough time, and during hiring, we're looking for reasons to say no. The reason has to be persuasive enough to get us over that kind of hurdle we have in our head. You have to meet our entry cost, if you will. Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned this resume got somebody a job, guys. The design is terrible. The content is terrible. But there are two things working in its favor. The hottest job market in history. I've been doing this job for 30 years, and it's, you know, so over a quarter of a century, and it's certainly as hot as I've ever seen, hotter. And in a field that, you know, if you have a pulse, you're going to be of interest to people. Cybersecurity, data warehousing, cloud architecture, all these kinds of things are super, super hot. In fact, I was talking to somebody the other day about what their child is studying in college, and they told me, I said, gosh, I'm surprised. And they said, why are you surprised? I said, what kid would go to college and not study software? I mean, as I think Andy Kessler said it, it might have been somebody else. No, I think it was Mark Andreessen said it a few years ago in a Wall Street Journal op-ed. Software is eating the world. Folks, that's not guidance for your children. I'm simply saying this person happens to be in the sine qua non of opportunities in a job market. It's as if he's holding a golden ticket, which is great for him. But if you were a friend of his and he showed you his resume and you followed it and you didn't have a background like his, you would wonder why your resume didn't work. It's because his resume didn't work either, but nobody cared.
Right. Yeah. And right now, that's fine. But as we all know, nobody has invented an economy that constantly grows. There will be a recession. There has to be. That's part of the way economies work. There will be a slowing. And some of the indicators have already turned. So, you know, maybe this resume will get you a job in the next 6 months. But 2 years from now, that's much more unlikely. So you can't rely on a resume that got you a job in a hot market and think, oh, well, I don't need to do anything with it. I don't need to make it any easier for the hiring manager. I don't need to make it more obvious what I've achieved because I'm fine. Well, you're fine now, but experience tells us you may not be fine in the future.
So one more thing to think about that. I think Rob mentioned the career management document. Folks, if you're wondering how to get your resume up to snuff, we've got a bunch of guidance about resumes. And one of the most important ones is the career management document. If you don't want to worry about your resume now, but you realize, oh, it's not good, it's fine. Forgive yourself. You didn't know. let it go. But to build a new one, you need to start with a career management document. So listen to our guidance on a career management document. And then sometime in the next 6 months, you're going to need once a quarter to update your career management document with current ideas. And you'll have to go back and dig through your past, but there are some ways to do that. And we have a cast on that. And then get your resume up to snuff. And remember, you want your resume ready to go out, already done. You don't want to faff around with it. When somebody says, hey, why don't you just send me your resume?
Yeah.
So when do you want to summarize?
Yeah, sure. So we said at the beginning of the guidance, the first impression your resume must give is boring professionalism. And the second is a professional who knows what matters in an organization and is able to achieve results in the areas that matter. That comes from responsibilities and accomplishments, not color and flair, however old school and boring that may seem.
Yeah, those of us who look at 100 resumes at a time need to have some conventions followed to make it easy for us to do it. Anything that makes it harder makes you less likely to move forward to the next step, and you don't want to do that to yourself. And as I tell all my friends, dude, you're not a designer. That's it, everybody. You've heard from the audience. You've heard from us. Resumes are necessary, but not sufficient to get you hired. But it's worth knowing how to do them and how to do them well. We hope yours leads to continued career success. See you next week.